طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح، طفلة.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program features the Palestinian voice, the Palestinian narrative, from a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. And that is why it is so important that we present it each week on This Week in Palestine. This is your host, John Roberts. As we know, 20% of the citizens of the State of Israel are Palestinians. As citizens, one of the few rights Palestinians have in this apartheid state is political representation in the Knesset, the Israeli parliament. Palestinian members of the Knesset are a distinct minority and are so often criticized by other Palestinians of collaborating with the Israeli system that so severely discriminates against them. This morning we feature one of those Palestinian members of the Knesset in an interview with the Palestinian journalist Salim Barahmeh in his podcast he calls Dardashe, where she speaks to the role she plays as a Palestinian citizen in the Israeli Knesset. Ida Tuma Sleeman is a prominent Palestinian feminist activist, founder of the Women Against Violence Association, and former newspaper editor. Tuma Sleeman is not only the first woman and only woman in Israel to head a daily newspaper, but also the first woman elected to the High Fellow-up Committee for Arab Citizens of Israel. She also, as a Palestinian citizen of Israel, is an elected member of the Israeli parliament, the Knesset. Born and raised in Nazareth, she now resides in Acre. We begin with a question from Salim Barahmeh to Ida concerning her years spent in Nazareth.
I wanted to ask you, as growing up in Nazareth, as a Palestinian, in a system that is trying to rip you of every part of your Palestinian identity, whether it's through the education system, whether it's through, you know, civic, any form, How does the community of Palestinians in 48 navigate that push and pull where you want to survive? It's your form of samud, right? But at the same time, it's the ultimate pressure on trying to squash that identity completely.
Well, I have to say that people tend from outside to look at us as Palestinians as if we were in a kind of a vacuum, which is not true, because I think that very quickly a good leadership was formed. People who were active before 1948, who were leading the community and who continued. And I can tell I wasn't at that point under the military role. I wasn't an idea that existed anywhere. But I keep hearing the stories, for example, about the heroic 1st of May in 1958 in Nazareth, where Israel wanted to celebrate its 10 years of establishment, of independence, in Nazareth, where usually the communists celebrated the 1st of May, on the same day. And the Communist Party decided that they, first of all, will not allow to be, you know, stepped on and humiliated to have in Nazareth the biggest city for the Palestinians in Israel to have the celebrations of 10 years of Israeli independence. So they called for the usual march of 1st of May. And the police did not allow that and blocked all the entrances to Nazareth and from the night before. And the communists had to smuggle in 1958 and to come in big groups and to do not allow the celebrations and to have the demonstrations. And there were clashes, and a lot of them were arrested and tortured in the prison because they insisted not to celebrate the independence at that day. So this is kind of a story that I keep hearing, but it's more, I was born in 1964, but I was my teenaging and my adults, you know, I started to understand what is going on around me in a very special time in our history, because Nazareth was controlled and the municipality of Nazareth was controlled by people who cooperated with the Israeli new system. And in 1975, the communists and their allies formed what is called the Democratic Front for Peace in Nazareth and Equality. It's actually was the Democratic Front of Nazareth. And it was formed mainly by patriotic groups and the communists. And we managed to win the elections and to have Tawfiq Ziyad as the mayor of Nazareth. Mm-hmm. And a new era started, because that was the era of democratic, patriotic forces, very progressive, not only managing the municipality of Nazareth, but also started to form different groups in different villages and towns. I was at that point in 1976, I was only, you know, 12 years old.
Mm.
I still remember, first of all, the landing, where, you know, all the story of the land day, where they tried through their collaborators from the municipalities to forbid the strike, the big strike of the land day. And Tawfiq Ziyad then confronted them and said, the people want the strike and the strike will be. And that was the first general strike announced by the Palestinian community. And of course, we lost 6 martyrs in that day by the police forces. And you are 12 years old and you're seeing Nazareth with police arresting people. You hear the fire. Mm-hmm. And know about people who are losing their lives because they are defending the land. And then you grew up a little bit and you see how the state is forbidding any budgets from the municipality and want to make the people get rid of the municipality because it is a patriotic municipality with a great leader like Tawfiq Ziyad. Mm-hmm. And you start to be part of the volunteer camps where every summer thousands of people coming from the West Bank, coming from all over the world to volunteer for 10 days in Nazareth and to build projects inside Nazareth because we were deprived from our. And you grew up and you hear the songs, and you meet the people who are coming from the West Bank, and you see Tawfiq Ziyad with his passion and with his poets, and you know that you are seeing, you are without knowing, your identity is formed. Without paying attention or looking for literature to read or to understand what it is, an identity, your identity is formed. And it's a mixture. It's not only a nationalist approach, but it's a mixture of a human values, of loving the land and feeling connected and understanding that you are going through an oppressive mechanism, and you are surviving and you are building something in you. So our generation, I think that even in the school, we never, in the curriculum, official curriculum, we never under, and you will never see neither Mahmoud Darwish nor Tawfiq Ziyad, who is the mayor of the city. We didn't know his poets except from Al-Ittihad newspaper, the newspaper of the Communist Party, which a few years later I became chief editor of it. So there you start to know and to read about the poets, the stories, the short stories, and you start to be exposed to different factors that build up your identity.
Mm-hmm. And do you think this? I mean, I think that's a very specific, unique case of where civil engagement was met with civil disobedience, etc., to formulate your political identity. But do you think this is true of the community within Palestinian, like Palestine and Palestinians in 48 overall, where there is this sense of nationalism and Palestinianness that still survives, even with today's generations? Or do you think there's still a struggle between the pressures of the Israeli state and their attempts at squashing that identity, and maybe the community's tug of war to establish it and keep it alive?
I think it's an ongoing struggle.
Yeah,
because even the Israel state is developing all the time new mechanisms, trying to control our lives and trying to control our consciousness, and this is what is more important, because. Mm-hmm. And you can see it in different stops or different junctions in our history, where there is a kind of maddu jazer, how you say it, when, you know, there sometimes we are going ahead and sometimes the oppression is pushing you back.
An ebb and flow, yeah,
and the mechanisms are very sophisticated. We have to say, especially I think the patriotic groups have donated very much to the awareness of the people and to strengthening those feelings, and the fact that we managed for certain time to have our alternative mechanisms, like I told you, we had our a newspaper that was giving the people the real information and giving the people the political and awareness, and through literature and through you know, hosting the best poeters among the Palestinians, also pushing this awareness more. Yani, it's not by chance that when you talk about Shu'ara al-Muqawama, the resistance poeters, if you start naming them, they are mostly coming from 1948, coming from Palestinians who lived in the state of Israel after its establishment, like the Fayyad, like Mahmoud Darwish, like Salim Jubran, and of course Emil Habibi as a writer, and you know.
Yeah.
We had to create alternative forms. In my opinion, the political parties and the political organizations played a major role in creating an alternative channel where my, especially my, the people who in my age could be exposed to this, because you have to try to imagine a world without internet and without this huge access to information in the world, and you only barely you could see a newspaper. I still remember when the first time we had TV in my house. So we were very much kind in a bubble created by Israel. I don't want to say bubble because it sounds cozy, but in a ghetto.
Yeah.
Ghetto, and when it comes to information, when it comes to, and without having inside this community those who were active in creating the alternative reality for us, I think we could have lost really parts of our identity, parts of our relation to our own people.
I want to tell you, I need a permit to go to 1948, and I visited Haifa for the first time in my life not too long ago. And one thing that surprised me in a way that there's a romantic element to it. I went and saw Palestinian restaurants playing Palestinian music and Palestinian literature and culture, very alive and vibrant within the city. And it surprised me, and it took me by surprise, because it was such a powerful statement of identity. Mm-hmm. And the more I spoke to, you know, Palestinians there, you know, they said there is a resurgence. But there was one also that was very prominent in the 70s and the 80s amongst the students. And so I don't know if you experienced that yourself, and what was that like?
Well, this is my generation.
Yeah, exactly.
In the 80s. Yes, I told you in the beginning that my mom told me, you're going to study, you're not going to do politics. And please be careful. And especially, you know, I'm coming from, I can say, almost a low socioeconomic family situation. And I was the first among seven girls to go to the university. So it's a big issue for the family. All the family was like trying to support and to finance my study and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And the first... And she knew that I'm very eager always to be engaged in politics, and I'm always asking questions, and I'm always trying to understand why we live in such a way and to compare the situation. And there was a very active student movement at that point, very plural, because there were the communists and the nationalists, Abna al-Balad, and we had organized ourselves to have a students' committee in each university, and then we had the student. Union from all the universities. And I have to say that most of the political leadership today, I mean, in the last 10 years, have risen from that students' movement, like Mohammed Baraki, like Issam Makhoul, like Jamal Zahalqa, like Azmi Bshara. all of them were in the student movement at that point. And you have to understand at that point, either you were a small worker, small in the meaning not high official, but they're like my father, a constructing a building worker, which could not really be in a confrontation with the employee, or where you could meet the Jewish community, really, when we are living in our towns and villages, and isolated from the everyday of Jewish life. The first meeting is in the university.
Yeah.
This is where the first time the Palestinians and the Israeli Jews are meeting and on almost equal level. Both of us are students. We are not working for them. They are not hiring us. There is no this hierarchy, but we are equal and we are young and we are proud of ourselves, as if, you know, the those who were privileged to become students from our own community. And there was the real, first of all, we had two levels of confrontation. One, vis-a-vis the administration in the university. And second, vis-a-vis the students themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We had to differentiate ourselves and to, I always believe that our identity is not one thing only, mm-hmm. it's one-sided, but it's a mixture of different identities that come together. But when you feel threatened the most in certain part of it, then you expose it more. Mm-hmm. Then you make it bigger. And that's what happened. When I was living in Nazareth, it wasn't so important to say every day that I'm Palestinian, because I'm living with the Palestinians. But when you go to the university and you see the Jewish students who want to humiliate you or who look from up to you,
mm-hmm.
down to you, then you want to be proud of your Palestinian identity. Then you want to tell them, I'm the owner. I am the real people of this place.
Mm-hmm.
And that came out in different activities, in different political engagement. And in the first month, I was elected to sit in the committee of students. And my parents had to read about this in the newspapers. So.
You didn't tell your mother you disobeyed her orders.
Yeah, yeah. My mother said, as if I told you, go and run for an office.
This interests me a lot. I want to understand more what type of conversations you had amongst yourselves as Palestinians. I mean, what were topics of discussion? What were you aspiring for? What did you want to fight for? Was it at that stage, we want to be equal in a state and a system that's that maintains supremacy of one people over another, treats us as second-class citizens, not enough resources, etc.? Or were there a bigger conversation on a more nationalist level within the Palestinian national movement? Or was it both?
I think it was a mixture. It was a mixture because on one hand, I mean, when I got to the university, very soon there was the first intifada.
Mm-hmm.
And the oppression that was going on and the understanding that there is a liberation Palestinian movement that need to be echoed and voiced inside the Israeli society, mm-hmm. that was very important. But at the same level, we also were fighting for equal rights and national rights inside Israel. And national rights, it's not always creating our own state. National right, it's also to be recognized as a national minority, as a national group, with all of our rights as a national group, including preserving our identity, preserving our culture, our heritage, and protecting our waqf, and you know, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And to have a political representation for us on the national level.
Mm-hmm.
I still remember we were very, very busy also, for example, of supporting our people in the first intifada and trying to bring demonstrating inside Israel to solidarize, or to not to solidarize, but to influence the Israeli society and to echo the voices of our people, but at the same time also bringing support and how you call it, Ghati.
Help, aid?
Aid for our people in the West Bank. I still remember the protest that we need to lead at that point. So it's a mixture of also trying to create a new reality for ourselves as citizens of Israel, but also as a national minority. And at the same time to use that reality that we are creating to bring our, the voices of our own people who are mm-hmm. under occupation since 1967.
Yeah, that's very interesting. One thing I wanted to pick up that you mentioned is, and it's a debate that I've had with a lot of my friends, Palestinians from 48 and elsewhere, is about, do you participate in the Israeli regime and electoral system and be part of that? Or do you try to not be part of it, but engage in other types of political activity, right? Do you run for office, national office for the Knesset, or is there better forms of political disobedience or civic engagement that can be done out, right? What do you say to those two positions?
Well, as you know, you introduced me as member of the Knesset. Yeah. So probably you know what I already choose.
Sure.
I if it is an ideological boycott, I can, you know, I can tolerate more than those who are talking about boycotting out of helplessness, mm-hmm. out of feeling I'm not able to do anything, it's ridiculous, it's so on. I believe that it's not an issue of participating only in the elections in Israel. It's an mm-hmm. issue which kind of solution you see for this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are still believing that there is a possibility, or you are heading and believing that the most likable solution at this mm-hmm. stage is a two-state solution, you will continue to fight for your place in the state that you are in.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, if you are calling for a one-state solution and you are waiting till annexation happens
mm-hmm.
and there will be an apartheid regime and we will turn the fight for the Palestinian fight for liberation into a civil right movement,
mm-hmm.
one man, one vote, or one woman, one vote, that's another issue.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to participate now in this system.
Yeah. It's
even then, we mm-hmm. have to remember that eventually the South African movement or any movement who will call for eventually there will be a fight to participate in election.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. Be a fight for the right of voting.
Sure, absolutely. The thing is, so there's the ideological.
One sentence to add.
Yeah.
I don't. Yani, my problem with those who are saying this, as if you are in the parliament,
mm-hmm.
or if you choose to vote, you are neglecting all other strategies of yeah. resistance,
yeah.
which is not true.
Yeah.
You can combine different strategies and try to affect wherever you can.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the parliamentarian work, without all the work that is done on a public or in the among the people, and to create a kind of a situation of resistance, it can't bring any the parliamentarian work without all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It can't bring any results.
Yeah.
If you only go on that type of work, sometimes you need to translate it into a power to change the system. Yeah. So.
I think that's a very good point. And so saying that if, you know, engaging in potentially, you know, the electoral system within Israel needs to be accompanied with other types of initiatives and strategies more broadly to engage with systems of oppression. But sometimes the question revolves around, well, there's the ideological part, but then there's the strategic part. So what is the strategic value of engaging with the system that is not likely to nudge? And so the argument or the criticism I often hear is, well, we're not strategically getting any wins. I mean, the most recent election and the coalition, but we're still participating and legitimizing. What do you make of that? Do you think that's fair?
What fair?
The criticism of that there's no strategic, there's no fruit, we're not reaping any strategic fruit from engaging in elections or any wins, but at the same time, we might be legitimizing that political process.
Well, first of all, I don't think I'm legitimizing anything. I think that the fact that we are so critical and we are so vocal inside the parliament, it's not a testimony that the Israeli system is democratic.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows, at least we are revealing this. We are criticizing, we are showing the world how undemocratic it is. We cannot deny the fact that the formal, we never said that there is a real substantial democracy in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there is a formal democracy. The formal democracy of the right to elect and to be elected. And I believe that as long as this formal election managed to give the world and to be used by Israel to say, look, we are giving them the possibility to elect. That was fine. The minute that we started to use that right, eventually in the last two elections, in a different way, and to grow as a real political power that can, you know, put pressure,
mm-hmm.
the Israeli system became more aggressive. And actually, I believe that we helped in revealing this aggressiveness
mm-hmm.
more than anybody who did not vote.
I see.
The fact that we became 15 members in the Knesset, and the fact that they have now they started to reveal the right-wing government
mm-hmm.
and some of those who are called liberal Zionists, or they call themselves leftist Zionists, okay? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But they were pushed, in my opinion, to the corner and started to reveal more and more aggressiveness in trying to oppress that possibility of influence that we are pushing for.
Mm-hmm.
And can see that in practices in the Knesset, you can see that in practices in public, you can see it in legislation. And I think the world is more opening their eyes and understanding when we are putting out these practices.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see someone of those who are saying not to participate to tell me what their strategy if we win the parliament. And you have to understand, I look at participating in the elections and being elected as a tactic. It's a tool. It's not an end. It's not it's not my cause. It's a tool that I'm using in my struggle. If I see and if I get to believe that I'm not doing anything and I'm actually serving the system, I don't have a problem to go out and to say, okay, this tool helped us for a while. Now what we have to reevaluate and to reconsider. And you need also to remember that we also are representing people who have civil rights and everyday life, and they want to protect it, and we want to protect it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I looked at the polling and I looked at, the Palestinian communities within 48 and their demand for basic services, basic civil rights, etc. And is one of the reasons also, why there was high turnout for the joint list. But you said something very interesting. So I'm now, as a Palestinian sitting in the West Bank, I look at the Palestinian national movement. I don't know where we're going. I don't know what we want. And this is why I think what you said about it being a tactic is spot on, and which I'd like to explore a bit more. I'm from Jericho originally, from Jericho in the Jordan Valley. And so they're talking about annexation of the land all around Jericho. You go talk to anyone in Jericho, they say, how do you feel about Israeli annexation? They say, oh, I thought we were already annexed. Because we don't have access to anything around our lands already. So the question is, you look at a map, you see that there's one entity, one regime that already controls everything, all our lives. And you're either unfree, all right, or unequal, or both. And you look at where we are in our history, and you see Palestinian communities that are more fragmented than ever. You know, there's a West Bank identity, and that cares about the West Bank struggle. There's a Gaza identity, cares about the Gaza struggle. East Jerusalem.
You have also Northern West Bank, and
exactly, we're extremely fragmented, and there's no principle, there's no political vision, there's no strategy that ties my immediate struggle to your immediate struggle. I feel for all the Palestinians in 48 that want a good life. Sumudhum is also important. All these things matter. But at the same time, the question then is, how do you connect that to a bigger national movement that is now reflective of the reality on the ground and where we are? And so what role do you as a member of Knesset have, as a leader within 48, to start maybe communicating or talking about what's coming into the future, especially after Israel formally annexes, big parts of the West Bank?
Well, you are actually asking me questions that we are in mid of very extensive deliberations and discussions, and we are trying really to figure out. And I was just saying yesterday, for my regret, in one of the meetings, we are talking about annexation as if it's going to happen for the first time in the history of Israel. This is not true. And for our regret, whoever is thinking that the world will go, wild and forbid it, should remember what happened when they annexed Jerusalem, and when they annexed the Golan, Assyrian Golan. Al-Julan, and have to understand that we are in a very bad era where we are fragmentized, and we are not only geographically fragmentized, we are politically fragmentized.
Yeah.
We have the Palestinian division, which is, I think, the most horrible thing that ever happened to us after Nakba and the Naksa. The question is, of course, when you are seeing the threat, you are thinking how to stop that threat in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of thinking that, okay, annexation is going to happen, it's going to happen, let's think what will be after. I at least believe that what we should be busy now with is try really to create a situation of not only opposition, but a real resistance to the annexation. We understand that the world is not in its best situation. I think that Netanyahu is going to use the COVID-19 crisis internationally, where every big country is busy with its own problem, mm-hmm, of how to deal with the crisis, and their possibilities to deal with the Palestinian issue now is very limited. Second, the fact that Trump is heading to his election, and there is a threat on his being re-elected, and Netanyahu would like to use that time, first of all, to put pressure on Trump to get his support for this step, and to use what is left from the time. If he will be re-elected, that's fine, but let's use the time until he's sitting in the White House. This is how Netanyahu feels. And for my regret, the Arab world is not going to show a real resistance to this. It's not even some support to it. So first of all, I think it's up to, as usual, it's in the hands of the Palestinian people to resist. This is the main thing. Are we developing good strategies for this resistance? I think not yet. And time is running out. Time is running out. And I think even if Netanyahu is not going to implement on the ground, although I believe he might do it, the annexation, he already in the minds of the Israelis, he won the battle.
Mm-hmm.
He managed to settle in the minds of the Israelis that it is legitimate to annexate the Jordan Valley.
Yeah.
Of course, the settlement.
This brings up the question, you know, for someone who grew up under the Oslo era. I'm 31. That's all the only reality I've known living in Palestine is promise of a state, more settlements. It's that ebb and flow. And for a lot of us that grew up and seeing that, we don't really believe that the two-state solution under the Oslo paradigm is feasible, because you essentially, if you want to base it on the parameters of land swaps, you need to move, even if you don't move all the settlements, you need to move anywhere from 200 to 350,000 settlers over the Green Line. Now you have settlers at the heart of the Israeli government. They're not going to move their own people anywhere. The Jewish-Israeli part of Israeli society is extremely right-wing. So there's no formula where you see within Israel that will allow for the two-state solution to happen. As you said, we're alone. The world is not going to stop. There's not going to be accountability proportional to what's happening on the ground. The Arab world is busy with other things. So it comes down to us. And I think, as you said, we need to have the conversation of what happens next, strategically, not just tactically, strategically and in terms of the vision we want. And I'm wondering, are those conversations happening with the members of Knesset, with the political parties, with the community within the 48? Because, you know, not all of us know, because we're so disconnected as all communities, kind of where people are, where people are thinking, what role we're going to be playing.
You know, my problem with this discourse is that it is going around what the Israeli government and what the settlers want, and is not saying what the Palestinians want.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the liberation movement is supposed to, first of all, rebel against what the settlers and the colonialists want.
Mm-hmm.
And not co-op and to try how to survive with their needs. And I can understand, as someone who was raised under in the era of Oslo agreements, that you did not see a different model of resistance. But first of all, I think the Palestinian people should ask themselves, we should ask ourselves what we want.
Yeah.
What? Because if you want to go out and fight there, you need to know what you are fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
Are you fighting for the right to be equal and to vote in the Israeli system as a Palestinian in the West Bank?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you fighting for liberation from occupation and to establish a Palestinian state, and then to start fight what kind of a Palestinian state? Is it going to be democratic,
yeah,
Islamic, controlled by, I don't know. But in the beginning, you need to know what are you fighting for, not what the Israelis want.
Mm-hmm.
The colonialists want all the land.
Mm-hmm.
The colonialists want to keep the settlements. The colonialists want to take every small piece of land that don't have a Palestinian on top of it. And if it has, they can, you know, remove him and take the land. So that's what they want. Okay. We know that over the history. The people did not liberate themselves because they took into consideration the occupation well.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I believe this is the major issue, to change the discourse and to start to think what is the goal and how it's going to be reached, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, saying that annexation will happen and there will not be any option for Palestinian state, and let's start fighting for a civil rights movement, declaring, you are, by saying this, declaring the end of the Palestinian liberation movement fight, struggle, and declaring that actually the Palestinian National Project,
mm-hmm,
and Zionism has won. I hope I will not live to that day. I mean, I don't see it in such a way. I believe that there are steps can be made through the process to change the rules of the game.
Mm-hmm. What can we do?
Created rules for that game. Sorry that I'm using the word game for, mm-hmm, that struggle, for that reality. And without changing the rules and disobeying the rules,
mm-hmm,
and going out against it, You cannot change them. Otherwise, you will be adapting yourself into them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't disagree with a lot of what you said, MK. I think it's about if we still want the two-state solution under Oslo, what is the strategy to do that? And what are you pragmatically facing, right? It's about strategy and being able to leverage your power as a people. And at the moment, when you look at that landscape, being able to develop something that is allowing you to secure that seems to be, you know, nearly impossible. And I don't necessarily think it's the death of the national movement or Palestinian national struggle if we pivot. I think we've pivoted in our national history in the 1970s from one democratic state to two states and in 1998. And I don't think a pivot back to, or a different evolution is necessarily closing the door on the Palestinian pursuit of self-determination. I think it's just being redefined because at the end of the day, there's a power asymmetry, right? Where it's not just Palestinians against Israelis, it's also Palestinians against the US and the structures that the EU and the US have funded and supported and the rest of the world. And so, okay, based on that reality, how can you then maximize the rights, the freedoms of your people? And that's what I think we're looking at. What do you think is the way forward? What do you think personally should be the vision of the national movement?
Listen, I wish I can say that it can be a dream to have a binational, democratic, secular state for the two people to live together. For me, this is even harder
mm-hmm.
to achieve at this point than the two-state solution. I see it even further and harder and not reachable more than the two-state solution because of all the reasons you mentioned till now, mm-hmm. because of the balance of power. Because till now, what the Palestinian people managed to do is to convince the world that they are the underdog in this story, and they are the one who are deprived of their life, of their right of self-determination, and they are living under occupation. Starting now, under this balance of power, to speak about the one state solution when Israel is pushing the narrative of the victim and pushing the narrative of the importance of having the Jewish state as if moving the threat from a threat on the right of the Palestinians
mm-hmm.
to have the right self-determination, and as if creating that threat, at least in illusion, in a way of thinking on the Jewish state, I don't see it as something that contribute to the struggle in this.
Mm-hmm.
Second, I think that it's up to the whole Palestinian people to decide if they want to say, okay, we didn't manage with our national project till today, and we are moving it to a kind of a struggle to be part of this state, and then as if to struggle for many years to come, maybe, to create the state that can be that kind of a democratic state for everybody who is living. In the one state solution, settlements are in the borders of the one state.
Mm-hmm.
Is anybody going to speak about them as illegal, or are they going to be totally legal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very good point.
About equal citizenship in that forthcoming state, take us as an example, Yassidi. 72 years fighting for equal civil rights. Where are we?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that, in my opinion, raising this at this point is admitting that the Palestinian national struggle for liberation of occupation has failed and is now transformed into a way of adapting into the colonialized reality.
You have been listening to an interview by journalist Salem Barakmeh, a Palestinian member of the Knesset, Ida Tuma Sleeman. And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You'll find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org. We thank you for your time, and we hope you will join us again next week for another edition of This Week in Palestine. This is your host, John Roberts, wishing you a good morning.
إلى بلد مهجر من مخيم